Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, along with our host, psychologist, and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson.
Well, thank you, Ryan. We at Family Talk, I don't have to mince any words. We are celebrating a remarkable victory that occurred about 10 days ago related to the outcome of our legal case against the Obama administration and the Department of Health and Human Services. Kathleen Sebelius, in particular, but she's gone now and a successor is there. Judge Blackburn, a federal district court judge, wrote a powerful statement defending our freedom and gave us a preliminary injunction that allows us to follow the dictates of our consciences. It's an eloquent statement. And the mandate would have required that Family Talk provide abortifacients, including the morning after pill, to our employees and their children, whether the parents know it or not. And an abortifacient can prevent implantation of the embryo in the uterus and usually results in death. And that is totally unacceptable to us. We are passionately committed to the defense of the unborn child, and this is an example of it. Now, that is very offensive to us and thousands of other Christian organizations, and we simply refuse to comply with the mandate. If we had not prevailed in the courts, the penalty would have taken effect on May the 1st, 2014. After that date, the fines would be running, and it would have cost $800,000 per year for our small organization. And that would have forced us to close our doors permanently. And we just were not willing to comply with that. And so we filed suit with the help of Alan Sears, who's the president of the Alliance Defending Freedom, and Martin Nussbaum, who is with the law firm of Lewis Rocha. And they together worked on this case. Alan Sears was the lead counsel, and Martin Nussbaum has been the support counsel. And we have been so fortunate to have been represented by these men and their firms. And they're both with us today. What a pleasure, gentlemen, to have you with us, especially on such a joyous occasion.
Jim, Martin here. It's good to be with you, and we're delighted with the decision. The litigation's probably not over, but we're very delighted with this opinion.
And Alan, you are too.
Well, yeah, this is Alan Sears, Alliance Defending Freedom, and Jim, it is so good to be with you again on a joyous occasion. You and I have been together on so many different radio broadcasts in the past where we've talked about so many things that are negative, so many of the problems and so many of the concerns. So it's a special joy to celebrate with the attorneys and the staff of Alliance Defending Freedom the victory on behalf of you and Family Talk.
Getting a favorable ruling is rare for those of us who are pro-life and pro-marriage and pro-family and otherwise conservative. This doesn't happen very often, at least not as much as I want to see it occur. And you are very gratified by the injunction as it was written.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll let Martin talk about your specific case, Doctor. But on the national level, you know, this is the first time in American history where we've had a chief executive, where we've had executive orders, where we've followed legislation with direct orders requiring employers as a condition of being in business that they facilitate the taking of innocent human life. There's absolutely nothing in the American legal history or our constitutional history so offensive as what is going on at this present moment. And I am so thankful for you and for the board of Family Talk and for your ministry standing in the gap. We've now had an Alliance Defending Freedom, which would not exist without you and the others that came together to launch us back in 1993, Dr. Dobson. But we're so thankful for the other employers who have stood and said, we will not be part of this scheme. And the Lord has granted us, with your decision a few days ago, the track record for our cases litigated is now 16-1. And it's a miracle. It's just something to celebrate. And the one loss is of friends of yours, the Hahn family, a Mennonite family from up in Pennsylvania who owned Conestoga Wood Products. And that case was heard before the U.S. Supreme Court on March 25th. It will be decided sometime before the end of June by the U.S. Supreme Court. And what I pray and hope is that the decision in that case is a winning decision. It's combined with the Hobby Lobby case, the Green family, and I pray that those victories make it unnecessary for us to go forward any further in your case.
And, Alan, because of what you said about this being the first time a chief executive officer, the president of the United States, requiring individuals to kill a baby in this way. That's never happened before. You told me the first time we talked that you thought this is one of the most important religious liberty cases in the history of this country.
Absolutely, because freedom of conscience, freedom of religion, is the essence of all other freedoms. In fact, all sorts of philosophers, writers, going back before the founding era of this nation, recognized that without free exercise of our right to conscience and the free exercise of religion, all other freedoms are impaired. Without religious freedom, the foundation for all other liberties is in great jeopardy.
Jim, I want to pick up on that because Alan is so right. The most distinctive thing about our humanity is we have a conscience. And a conscience doesn't work unless we can exercise it. To have a conscience, you have to be able to exercise it, and that requires freedom. So it's defending the most distinctive aspect of our humanity. And not only that, Dr. Dobson, this is the most distinctive thing about our country. The most distinctive thing about the American experiment is we do not have an established church. We have free exercise of religion. That's what Madison and the founders fought for. And that's exactly what's at stake in this case.
Martin, describe what this law actually says and why it's so offensive to us. I tried to explain it, but put it in legal terms.
What we have here is a breach of the historic truce for the past over 30 years now. Since 1973, when Roe v. Wade was decided, the truce in America is that the abortion has been part of the freedom in America. But the Hyde Amendment said we weren't going to fund abortion. And when Obamacare passed, it didn't include a Hyde Amendment. It then got an executive order to placate Representative Stupak and some pro-life Democrats to get their votes, essentially putting in a Hyde Light amendment, if you will. Even then, we did not have in the statute that passed by Congress, how hard fought that was, there was no abortifacient mandate in the statute. That's purely a creature of regulation. So the regulations interpreting the statute mandated that all employers in their plans, all group insurers must include contraceptives, and within that term, they include certain drugs that functions as abortifacients, which Family Talk and you are morally opposed to because of your religious beliefs. So there was complaint, and the government then broke the employers into three different groups through a series of regulations. The first group, the government calls the religious employers, and it's a very narrow exemption granted to them. It's a narrow class of employers that are eligible for that
basically
exemption.
Basically, churches.
And,
right?
Martin, basically, the government is deciding who's religious enough with that regulation, right?
You're exactly right, and that's exactly where I was heading, because the implication by exempting only churches and denominations and religious orders fall within the religious employer exemption, the government is saying that ministries like Family Talk aren't religious enough to be an exemption, and it gives them an accommodation, and that's a whole different group of employers like Family Talk and Alliance Defending Freedom and Christian colleges and universities and hospitals, Christian and Catholic hospitals and so on and so forth. They get an accommodation or a so-called accommodation. I'm going to come back to that. And then there's a third group of employers, which are the for-profit employers like Conestoga Wood Specialties, like Hobby Lobby. They get nothing other than the mandate. And both they and the second group of employers get ruinous fines, $100 per employee per day, if they don't play ball. Now, what the accommodation is, in my view, is smoke and mirrors. And it's also in the view of this court in this decision, smoke and mirrors. It requires Family Talk and similar employers to deliver what the government characterizes as a permission form. It's actually called EBSA Form 700. And to sign it and deliver it to your third-party administrator for your plan. Here's the legal effect of delivering that document to the TPA. First, it amends your plan document, Family Talk's plan document, so that it now includes abortifacients as part of the services that are given to Family Talk employees who are covered. Secondly, it makes the TPA, the plan and benefits administrator under the plan. Thirdly, it makes the TPA legally obligated to deliver those benefits. Fourthly, it requires the TPA to tell your employees at the very moment that they're signing up for their own group health care coverage with Family Talk that this is going to be provided to them free of charge, that you may teach a gospel against abortion, but when they enroll here as your employees as under the health care program, the TPA will be giving them notes and messages that one of the benefits of working at Family Talk is they get abortifacient coverage. So that, of course, gives rise to scandal. That's what the accommodation does. Now, the government in the case likened that to a permission form. If it's a permission form, when you raise your hand at an auction, you're just raising your hand. Mm-hmm. You're not submitting a bid that has a legal effect.
Well, and Barton, one of the things that you mentioned is that this so-called permission slip, this government order that you fill out this piece of paper and sign it, has fines of $100 per employee per day for ministries like Family Talk. And, of course, for the secular employees who are owned by Christian or other people of faith, but who are not faith-based in their corporate structure. And that fine, let's think about that for a minute. $100 a day per employee is $36,500 per year per employee on top of the cost of health insurance that's being provided. But if you provide no health coverage for your employees at all, Martin, the fine is only $2,000 per year. So in other words, the fine if you give even the highest level health coverage and leave out the abortion pill is 18 times more than if you provide no insurance at all. Is this an attack on women's health, or is this something else, Martin and Doc?
It's clearly playing to one's base. Politically, it's not about providing health care. To have a fine structure that's 18 times as much for giving no health care coverage.
Does this mandate for people like us who live and die by our Christian faith and are willing to do that, in fact, does not represent the most egregious, arrogant maneuver of any executive order in history that I know of, and I haven't reviewed them all, but it sure sounds unusual.
You know, I'm sure Alan and I both, I know that I do study American religious liberty history, and so some people have asked me who would be your candidate for the administration most hostile to religion in American history, and until now, I would have said Ulysses S. Grant, who, among other things, banned Jews from three states during the war, actually ordered them out of three states and took huge activities against Catholics as part of his reelection campaign in 1876. But I agree with you. I do not know of anything in American history as hostile to people of faith and religious liberty as this mandate. And in fact, part of the evidence of that is the historic number of lawsuits the religious community has filed against the administration calling for their freedom. There are now 96 cases that have been filed in federal court involving over 300 plaintiffs. This has never happened in American history to have that many religious groups go to their courts and ask for protection of their free exercise.
And one of the other things that Martin is well aware of, Jim, is the outrageous other exemptions that have been granted to others. And they're not outrageous because they've been given exemptions. They're outrageous because they've granted secular after secular after secular exemption for industries, for individuals, for classes of people that involve millions of people otherwise subject to coverage by health insurance. But they have refused to grant even a single exemption to the second and third tier of people for religious reasons. So there are just an array of secular reasons that people are being allowed to opt out and not being required to fund abortion pills or other aspects of this program. But if you're a person of faith and you're honest and you say, the reason I don't want to be participating in this is because of my faith, you will not be allowed an opt out. And just as an example of the kind of things this leads to. One of our clients, who you know well, Dr. Dobson, is Tyndale Publishing.
Yes.
Tyndale is the largest publisher of Bibles in the world today, and the Obama administration found that they were not religious enough to be subject to an exemption. And we had to sue on their behalf. And I'm glad to tell you that there is a preliminary injunction also in place protecting Tyndale Bible.
The court seems to be agreeing with you in the majority of the cases, right?
It is.
Overwhelmingly, the number of cases that have been brought by people of faith with courage has been a winning streak. The problem is, of course, is that many, many people are still very intimidated and very afraid to challenge the government, even with favorable rulings like the one that you had, because they're afraid of where this may lead in future circumstances. They're afraid that they may be fined out of existence, that they may otherwise be targeted. There is truly a climate of fear, intimidation, and a lot of disinformation within the faith community about this issue. And that's one of the reasons I'm so thankful for your victory.
Yeah, the victory of both of you and the organizations you represent.
The lead argument that we made in the case was that this case violated a statute called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which, by the way, was signed into law by President Bill Clinton.
Uh-huh.
And this act says that if you have a law like this that burdens the exercise of religion, the government must show that it has a compelling governmental interest that would support the public policy that would overwhelm the religious liberty interest. So the argument here, the government essentially conceded that it doesn't have a compelling interest. It conceded that the government didn't have an important interest for burdening your religious liberty. What it argued is it didn't burden your religious liberty. And I want to read to you from Judge Blackburn's order, because the argument is that this form we talked about earlier is a mere permission slip, and what could be the burden to just raise your hand and ask for permission? Here's what the court said about this so-called permission slip. It is the de facto forced facilitation of the objectionable coverage that is religiously repugnant to the plaintiffs. The resultant moral abhorrence is not effectively extenuated by a transfer of responsibility via the exemption form from the plaintiffs to the TPA. In other words, what the court's saying here is that forcing you to engage a surrogate to provide that which you're morally opposed to doesn't alleviate your moral obligation. And it drives that home by saying such legal leisure domain does not expiate the morally unacceptable means to an end.
That guy's quite a writer,
so
isn't he?
he knew exactly what the government's game was, and he wasn't going to play ball.
And from Alliance Defending Freedom, we're very thankful for that judge, for his articulation of the issue. And I've just got to mention, I'm very thankful for the wonderful legal team that he's put together. Matt Bowman, Kevin Tirio, others on our team work very hard on the case. And I would be remiss to not mention and thank the incredible efforts of all those that work so hard for you, Doctor.
And, Alan, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that the Alliance Defending Freedom handled this case for us at no cost to us whatsoever. And I hope that our listeners will provide the contributions that will cover this expense, because it was really a massive undertaking.
Well, we're very thankful for your kindness. And one of the things, for those that may not be familiar with Alliance Defending Freedom, is that one of the founders in 1993-94 of our ministry was Dr. James Dobson. Mm. And we're so grateful for you and the others that came together to make it possible for us to launch this. And we kind of smile when we think that back in 1993, God knew that we would need to be involved in defending Dr. Dobson and his ministry and team members someday. And we're thankful we could do that, and we're so thankful for the result. And we're thankful for good friends and allies like Martin, who's worked so very hard and done such good work in this case.
You know, when we came together to form a new organization, it was then called Alliance Defense Fund, and there were only about six or seven organizations, mine included, that helped put up the money. And I had known you, Alan, because you were the executive director of the Attorney General's Commission on Pornography, and I was a commissioner appointed by Attorney General Meese at the request of President Ronald Reagan. So I was there. I saw you. I saw what you stood for. I saw your values. I saw your courage. And then when it came time to form this new organization, I knew who I was in favor of. And it was so important because at that time, the ACLU was just rolling over Christian organizations and schools and those that had organizations like I did. And a lot of these nonprofit organizations would just give up. They wouldn't fight because they didn't have the money to do it. And that's why the Alliance Defending Freedom exists today. And I'm really proud of what you've done. If I may say, we're really running out of time here, but this news of our victory has been carried throughout the media. It's really amazing. ABC, CBS, the Associated Press, which is carried in 1,200 newspapers, Fox News, the others carried the word just 10 days ago when Judge Blackburn issued his ruling. But I had said something that Fox News quoted. I had written it in my letter. I think it went to about 250,000 people at the time. And this is what I said, and this is what got quoted in the article by Fox News. I said, "I believe in the rule of law, and it has been my practice since I was in college to respect and honor those in authority over us." That's a biblical principle. "It's my desire to do so now. However, this assault on the sanctity of human life takes me where I cannot go. And I will not, in capital letters, I will not pay a surcharge for abortion services." That's what was on the table at the time. "The amount of the surcharge is irrelevant. To pay 1 cent for the killing of babies is egregious to me, and I will do all I can to correct a government that lies to me about its intentions and then tries to coerce my acquiescence with extortion. It would be a violation of my deeply held convictions to disobey what I consider to be principles in Scripture. The Creator will not hold us guiltless if we turn a deaf ear to the cries of His innocent babies. So come and get me if you must, Mr. President. I will not bow before your wicked regulation." And thanks to you gentlemen and your team and your law firm, Martin, for helping me keep that promise.
Well, it was a bold statement when you made it, and I think it's—
You reviewed it, in fact.
I remember that, and I also was with your board, and I think it's okay to talk about the board—
Absolutely.
—meeting just before this decision came down, because the board was looking at the May 1 deadline, and the board understood that if Judge Blackburn had not ruled by May 1 in our favor, that the fines would have begun. And as we've talked earlier, that would have been ruinous to this ministry. And the board stood with you and stood with these principals and said, "We have to get the exemption because we're not going to cooperate with evil." Essentially,
I am blessed by one of the finest boards I've ever seen.
Yes.
I mean,
well, we're very thankful from Alliance Defending Freedom for the answer to many prayers. And we're thankful, Jim, to you and to your board, to your ministry, for standing. And one of the things that the good news about this victory has done is encourage people of faith all across this nation to know that you still can stand up against evil, that you can stand against those things the government has done that are overreaching and wrong, and that you can win. And what I pray is that we will now soon have a final victory in these matters, that that we can go on to fight the next one.
I wrote a letter to our constituency, which is now larger than it was before when I made reference to it. And my last paragraph, two lines, "We can win these battles to defend righteousness if God's people will stand and fight." And this time they did.
Yes. And, you know, finally, I think it might be important for your listeners to understand this battle probably isn't over. The government, if it follows the pattern it's done in other cases, will appeal this to the Tenth Circuit. And at that point, Family Talk's going to have some company because there's three other similar cases pending right now before the Tenth Circuit. One is the Little Sisters of the Poor case. which is situated similarly to the way the Family Talk is. The next is the Southern Nazarene University case. And finally, the Reaching Souls International case. Those are all that's involves a company called Guidestone, a ministry called Guidestone. And they'll all be decided in the days ahead. These are all a little different than the Hobby Lobby Conestoga Wood Specialties case because these are the employers that have been granted the so-called accommodation. So a lot's going to be happening here in the 10th Circuit in the months ahead.
So we've got a lot to pray about and lots of hard work to do, don't we?
Yes.
You've been listening to an update on the Obamacare lawsuit here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and if you'd like more information about the lawsuit, the Ministry of Family Talk, or to financially support the work we're doing here, you can do so by calling us at 877-732-6825, by visiting our website at drjamesdobson.org, through our Facebook page, or the Family Talk smartphone app. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.